Hello, I'm Elizabeth, an obsessive backyard gardener who might be able to offer you a couple of tips.
And I'm Keith, a landscape consultant, and I'm also passionate about gardening.
The one thing we both have in common is
muddy boots.
On many occasions over the last few months, I have found any excuse on our podcast to bring up the subject of my new garden. And I use the term new garden quite loosely because it currently looks more like a dust bowl than a garden. Because we are replacing the old garden of our new home section by section and literally starting from the soil up, Keith and I thought it would be useful to share each step with our listeners along the way. I am very, very lucky to be able to call on Keith's incredible knowledge for this because I have none. Well, I have some. And I want to share that with you, some of which you might want to use in your gardens as well. He's also been hands-on with so much of the garden so far, which has been amazing, haven't you, Keith?
No, not a lot.
Yeah, you have. Oh, God, you have. As we're only at the start of this project, we'll have regular podcast updates, and today we're going to start with step one, and that begins with why I chose to start a new garden. Mm-hmm. Now, Keith.
Yes.
I want you to be honest, completely honest. What was your first reaction when you drove past our new house once we'd bought it and you saw the garden?
Well, in actual fact, it wasn't that big a shock for me. I mean, it wasn't the worst garden in the street, let me put it that way, not by a long shot. But, you know, I mean, the garden was what the people who lived here, you know,
wanted,
I guess. You know, they wanted the particular plants that were available and were trendy at that particular time.
Yep.
The James Stirling hedge of protostrums you had down the side, well, that was applicable back in the
1980s. Very much an 80s style of garden.
Yeah, so definitely. It was. And the paving and all those sorts of things just were what they were.
And the mix of exotic and natives.
Yeah, sort of. A lot of that. And a lot of, you know, plants that, you know, would have required a fair amount of work to rejuvenate them, you know, and it just wasn't worth it because this is your garden, not their garden. You know,
and
so
I've never been a protosporum fan, I have
to
say. So they have to go. We've got rid of a few. We've got a lot more to go. The house also lend its style to a really, I think, Mediterranean-style mm-hmm. garden. So that was what we've decided to build.
Yes.
A garden that, once established, will require hopefully a little less maintenance, hopefully, mm-hmm. than our previous garden, and one that can tolerate extreme weather conditions because that's what we deal with, isn't it, these days? So that's what we're getting started with. So I decided the best way to tackle this massive job was to work on one of the four sections at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And the first section is the area that we see most of when we look at the garden from inside. So it was the obvious one to start with, and that's what we're doing.
Yes.
The kitchen also overlooks this area, and it gets the most sun, so it was the best space to plant a vegetable garden. Mm-hmm. So after removing all of the existing garden, the very first thing we did was to order two mod box raised garden mm-hmm. beds, which are now placed very close to the kitchen window. They're easily accessible, and they're in a position where I can keep my eye on them, which is perfect. So
exactly.
We're cooking and we're looking out at the garden going, right, what can we cook tonight? We'll put some chilies and some tomatoes and some, you know, whatever's in there. Keith very kindly measured the area for us so that the boxes were placed accurately. How exactly did you work that one out, Keith? Because I knew you probably thought that I'd muck it up.
No, we worked off a plan. That's the only way to do something is to draw up a plan first and then implement that plan. You know, so we knew exactly where the boxes were going to sit and fit. And I guess the other thing that makes this part of the garden just so important is that this is where your guests and your friends will actually come to. This is where the front door is.
That's
is right beside this garden. You know, so that had to be taken into account, just how that is going to impact on that given
on
space.
The feel when they walk in the door, when they walk in the gate. I was going to say, that's right, those mod boxes, you turned up a couple of days after you'd measured up and you actually insisted that you actually build those mod boxes. I really think he thinks I'm useless. And I probably wouldn't have done a good job. And he did it beautifully too. So we are very, very, very lucky that we have you,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Lego Builder, to do that for us.
And then, of course, what we had out there was a little bit of garden and a lot of lawn.
Yeah, we did.
And the lawn was the first thing that we actually attacked. We got some ways of knocking the grass off. to kill it.
Keith did that too.
Because you can't have any new grass growing in an area that's going to become totally garden bed, because you'll have weeds and all sorts coming straight up through it.
Mm-hmm. But before that, I wanted to make a point of the fact that at Christmas time, I had a very exciting little gift of plans, which were beautiful. And I think some of you might have seen a little video we posted on Instagram and Facebook of those amazing plans that Keith has drawn up of this section of the garden. And, excuse me, we've got the front and the side. So the front will be phase two.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what dramas we'll see with that, because we're finding a few dramas at the moment with phase one, with pipes under roots of trees and all sorts of terrible things. But
and also pipes that and drains that have been covered up.
And completely blocked.
That are going to be problematic if they hadn't have been discovered by the landscaper.
So the money, the dollar signs are just going crazy, bang, bang, bang at me, ka-ching, ka-ching. Can you explain a little bit about how those plans came together, those phenomenal plans?
Okay, so in order to create the plans, we had to get the actual site with the house on it, and they're available through the council. Mm. The council has to have plans of all the buildings and the block and all the rest of it.
History of the property.
Yep, history of the property. So you managed to get those through the local council, and that was the start of me plotting that out and just coming back and plotting in the main things that we're going to be keeping and looking at and all the rest of it, such as the driveway, which it has to stay. We can't, spend mega bucks on replacing that. So that had to be plotted onto that plan. It wasn't there. And then I guess the part that made my job easy, which exactly part of the brief, was the plants, and you supplied a list of the plants that you really want to see and use in your garden, and it was my job then to put them onto the plan.
And a place for them,
in the right sort of sizes and spaces and diameters, and so we knew exactly how many plants we're going to be coming up with for that particular job.
It's a big job. It's a big job for you. So it was amazing. I don't know how you do it. It's just you got that talent, I think.
Well, that's what I do for a living.
Landscape consultant talent.
As long as you've got the brief, you're right, and I know the sorts of things that you like, and you've shown me the plants that you wanted, so it was just a matter of pulling all that together.
That's fantastic.
But, at the end of the day, we've gone about this in the right manner. We haven't just looked at the landscape that you got out there and said, okay, we're going to dig a hole and put a plant in, because it was going to set us up for failure.
I know. We've got to, if you get the bones right, then your garden will flourish.
Everything else is going to work.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right.
And we're doing that right now. And hopefully it'll go a bit more smoothly than it's gone so far.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so as far as the next step when landscape design, the soil is the important thing, isn't it? So that's the next and most important job, and we have worked pretty hard on that. It was pretty depleted, I think, of any nutrients we both found. So armed with those magnificent plans and all the measurements needed to work out how much soil and compost we needed, we then ordered a very, very large load of Clyde's compost soil mix for the raised beds and for the garden, at the garden as well, and lignite humates to cover the whole area. Now, I've just spent the last few weeks shoveling all of this into the garden. And now, Keith, I know we've discussed this in a previous podcast, but what is the benefit of lignite humates? Can you remind us?
The benefits are that you're putting back carbon into that soil, so we're sequestering carbon. But the beauty about the lignite humate is that 80% of that product is actually humate itself, which is the building blocks of life. And that has the capacity to hold 200% more moisture within itself and in that soil area. So you're cutting back on the need for watering and all the rest of it. And the humates are not going to leach out of the soils like just normal compost. It's the building blocks of life. And one of the most amazing things about that humate when you look at it is when you touch it, it's got this certain feel, and it's got this certain coolness about it. But when you touch it, you're touching something that is 200 million years old.
Amazing.
Isn't it? And that's just mind-blowing when you think about it that way.
Yeah, I know.
And incorporating that into the garden is going to feed everything.
I know.
Not just the plants, but it's going to feed the microbes, the flora, the fauna in that soil, and it's going to set you up to have the best garden in the street.
And once it's in, you don't have to add it again.
Never have to do it again.
It's amazing.
That's right.
It's amazing stuff. So it's just too exciting. Okay, the next plan was to hire a tiller to mix the compost and lignite into the old soil. However, Brett, my husband, decided that would be better off. We would be better off using the services of the wonderful and very talented landscaper Matt Phillips from Morningside Landscapes, who is currently out there working very hard on that. Next, once that is done, is to get a huge load of granitic sand trucked in. And we might get Matt to help us with that too. So that'll be exciting. And then once that's been done, we're going to build some steps, add some pavers, and put in the irrigation. Now, what sort of irrigation are we going to put in, Keith?
Well, we're going to be putting in, if we can get them, that's the problem.
That's right.
We're going to be putting in a Dan micro sprinklers. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to be subsoil irrigation. It's going to be above the ground irrigation. And the reason I like that is because you can see the watering effect on. You can see when they've come on, you can see the area that they've covered, and if you need to make any adjustments, it's a real easy process to do.
Okay.
So these Dan micro sprinklers have a stake, they have a 6 mil tube that can be cut and added to, and so you can extend the length, any length you like. So that means you're not relying on having the main supply line to feed those sprinklers all over the place. You can have it just in nice big straight runs and then attach your sprinklers to that with the micro tubies.
Okay.
Pull it all the way through that.
Fantastic. So all I have to do is turn it on in the morning, early morning.
Yep. Early morning, and
watch it go.
And I've just done this for a section of garden at our place. I've just bought a timer. It's a little electronic timer. I think it cost about 60, 70 bucks.
Okay.
And I've got that set for every 3 days to come on for the irrigation for the garden.
At 4 a.m.
or something. Minutes. Sorry?
4 a.m. or 10 at 5
yeah,
a.m.
Yeah, best early in the morning because you're getting the optimum amount of pressure that's available.
Yeah, right.
No one else is draining that pressure by showers and all the rest.
4 a.m.'s good.
Yep.
Okay.
And then, of course, the water has the opportunity then to soak through the soil profile down to where the roots are, and the uptake of that by the plants is early in the morning.
Yeah.
That's there from in the heat of the day.
Yeah. Well before the heat. Okay, so once that's in, I hope it will still be the perfect time to plant, and I have a lot of beautiful plants to spend money on.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to hear the list very quickly? I'll just mention the common names.
Go on.
I won't. Not all of them, obviously, because there are a lot. Japanese maples, specifically Acer japonicum vitifolium.
Yep.
Crepe myrtles, baby bay trees, citrus trees, oleanders, smokebush, corias, leucodendrons, liriope, euphorbias, lavenders, grasses, Calamagrostis overdam.
Yeah, that's
that right?
The grass, yes.
The grass. Stipa gigantea is another grass.
Yes.
Miscanthus sinensis pink flamingo.
Yes.
Then we go to Verbena bonariensis.
My favourite. Love
it. Yes, I know. Nepeta, being catmint.
Yep.
Raphiolepsis.
Yes.
Japanese anemones. Hydrangea quercifolia, oak leaf hydrangea, that is. Salvias, sedums, alchemilla mollis, lamb's ears, seaside daisies, Wistringa, scaevola, and Mueller. I did mention most of them there.
You did. And we have part of the garden that has a pathway in the house on one side and a very, very narrow garden bed up on it, and we're wanting to screen that across there. So we're actually going for an Australian native along there that has been hybridised, and that is Syzygium austral, straight and narrow.
Yes,
and it is a plant that is resistant to psyllids and also to beetles and all the rest of it, and it will get to about 5 meters tall by a meter wide. So it's a great, straight
area.
And narrow plant. And once it's in, it'll be as tough as old boots. And it'll just give you this wonderful green wall that will just highlight the house.
Amazing, amazing. Its common name is?
Just Lily Pilly. Straight and narrow.
Straight and narrow. Fantastic. I'm so excited. I wish it was all in now. But anyway, I'll be happy to be patient. Okay, so this is where we're at.
Yeah.
Pretty much. As you can tell, there is a lot to do, but I'm determined to enjoy every step along the way, and I'm really looking forward to having some greenery and some flowers. Again, I've missed the flowers. We've got some behind us at the moment, which is lovely. And I've heard that a lot of our old garden has sadly been dug up to make way for the old house, which is going to be taken away on a truck, so that makes me a bit sad. But I've moved on.
Yep.
Moved on.
You have.
Don't really want to see that. Got anything else to say?
No, except I just think it's a great journey, and the best part of this journey is going to happen when you actually start putting plants into the ground.
Oh yeah,
And then come springtime, they just burst into life, and you'll have a backyard that will look absolutely brilliant by the end of summer. It'll look fantastic.
And then we just, when I get some more money, start on the berry back.
On the rest of it.
And the other side and the front.
Exactly.
It's going to be a couple of years, but, you know, if you'll join us, we'd love to have you. Thank you, Keith, and thank you so much, because I couldn't do any of it without you. I don't know, I'd be lost.
It's an absolute pleasure.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Muddy Boots. For more information on today's podcast, please go to muddyboots.net.au, and happy gardening.